That is a talent, sure, but you couldn't have picked a better song. What did he play, like Metallica or something?
He was just playing the blues.
Was he? Oh, all right.
It actually like wasn't like a, it didn't even feel like a whole song. You know, because like, you know how the blues is like, well, I you know, like, it's like, and I'm going home. Like, it just kind of felt like he did like the improv section of a song with no melody, start or end. And then it felt like,
a straight man playing a drag queen.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what made it so funny, because it's like, if you didn't believe that Matty Morphosis was straight, watch Matty Morphosis play that guitar, and that was the music of a straight man.
Attention. Calling all whispering hunties. Oh, crrr.
Hey.
Hi. I'm Mijan, a semi-drag race expert charged with the task of talking about queer culture and drag race around the world. We're gonna keep it cute, we're gonna keep it shady, but always real. So grab a snack, come on back, and let's get into those whispering hunties. Oh my God, is that Jonah from The Queer Creative? Hello, how are you?
Hi, Mijan. So happy to be here.
This is such an honor because basically, I mean, I have a couple different inspirations for the podcast, and The Queer Creative is definitely one of them. I started listening to your podcast during COVID when I was, you know, I'd been let go from my job, obviously, because as a performer, there wasn't a lot of performing going on during March of 2020. And I was just sitting at home and I just wanted some sort of community of creative people to inspire me to figure out what my next step was. And I literally Googled queer creatives and I found your podcast.
Well, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that. And thank you for the kind comments. So pleased that we were able to be an inspiration for you. And thanks for this lovely welcome. I love it.
You're very welcome. So The Queer Creative is on a hiatus right now. I was shook when I was listening to the episode. I was like, where is it going? Bring it back, please.
So it is on hiatus, and we do take quite a few of those.
Yeah.
We both have small businesses. So as you know, producing takes up a lot of time, and also just coordinating with guests and doing research and preparation for each interview is very time consuming, especially if you want to do it on the level that we're trying to achieve. And quite often it just becomes exhausting and I'm working nonstop. So I need like 2 months, 3 months off. So once a year, we'll take 2 months off between seasons, but it works out for us. And I thought we would lose a lot of listeners by doing that, but turns out people appreciate it. Like we don't lose any followers online, even though we're not posting online on any social. And then our viewers do die off. But once we start back up, usually around like episode 3, we're right back to our usual listening base. So,
oh my God,
works out well for us. Yeah.
I feel like you've curated such an amazing like assortment of guests that it is good to take time off, because I mean, just scheduling with people alone takes up so much time.
Yes.
And even this little podcast, like I've had to take a break. Like right now there are like 520,000 different drag races around the world.
Yeah.
And I literally burnt out before the new year. And I was just like, I need to stop watching this TV show. As much as I love it, I just need 2 weeks where I'm like not planning anything. I have my full weekend to myself. And, you know, that rest and relaxation really helped me find my love for the TV show as well. There were just too many drag queens in my life. And sometimes absence does make the heart grow fonder.
Totally. What episode is this of the podcast?
I'm past 100 at this point. There was a while where I used to do 2 episodes a week and like split them in 2. So this is episode number 77, I believe, or 78.
Oh, congratulations. That's amazing.
I know. When I get to 100, I definitely want to do like the first live show ever. Maybe at like Come On Everybody, because I'm friends with the owner.
Oh, that's fantastic. You should definitely do it. I would go.
Oh, really? Oh my God.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And we would definitely, we'll do some cross promotion too. We'll get some of our listeners to, we'll promote it on our Instagram.
Oh my God. Thank you. And it's so funny. So at least on the last episode, I kind of was under the impression that the guest on that actually started doing his podcast after listening to your podcast. So you're basically like birthing podcasts. You're like the drag mama podcast.
Yes. Well, we started the podcast initially because I was getting burned out. My business, MK Workshop, is an interior design firm that we have here in Brooklyn.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And so after 10 years of doing that, I found myself in a bubble and I was just living in this world of interior design. And I was also the people in that field are generally not funny or charming. Everyone seems to be at it 100 at all times and always running around annoyed. But I sort of was getting burnt out and I'm like, what am I missing here? And it was the fact that I had no other sort of creatives around me that were from other fields. So I was talking to my friend Vanessa and we came up with this idea to sort of branch out our circle. She was also feeling the same burnout that I had. So the concept came from us wanting to meet new creative people that we were inspired by and also give people platforms that aren't like actors and singers and you know, the people that you hear from all the time. Those voices, like, I feel like we've heard enough of them, right?
Oh, yeah. And they all have their own podcast. So it's like, they don't shut up. Totally.
Absolutely. So we wanted to give a chance for, like, you know, the glass blower or somebody who works with clay or just these sort of, like, quirky creatives that we're not necessarily hear a lot from. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. You know, I feel like sometimes as a creative, you have to constantly give yourself the license to go after maybe some form that you're not comfortable with. And what I get from listening to your podcast is that, like, literally, like, you can do anything. It's just, you just need, like, a passion for it and a dedication and then time.
Yeah. And you have to also be kind to yourself and allow for the mistakes. The mistakes is where the growth happens. So a lot of people get afraid of just doing the initial steps because they seem so daunting or they don't want to look foolish or they, you know, are embarrassed because they're not sure how things work. But you're never going to do it unless you dive in is my philosophy. Like, I will just start something. Like clay, for instance, I had never worked with clay. I interviewed this beautiful ceramics artist on the podcast, Yumi Poirier, and she inspired me to go start working with clay. So I took a class and just dove right in. And of course, I didn't do the beginner's class because I'm an idiot. And I chose the, I'm like, oh, I'll just, let's jump to advanced. And I made an ass out of myself for the first couple of classes, but eventually I got the hang of it and I just sort of dive in and I learned a lot and I had such a fun time doing it.
I know. It's important to try new things. I've always appreciated storytelling and podcasting. And when I first even thought about getting into podcasting, I was like, well, how do you do that? And I was like, okay, well, I guess you need a microphone and a program like a DAW to edit it. And slowly but surely, I just taught myself skill after skill after skill. And now I've actually worked on 4 podcasts now, and I'm actually work full-time as a podcast producer, which I didn't think I was going to do initially, because at first it was like a passion project, but now I'm actually like working on, like, I made a podcast about podcasting called Tooltip Time that came out last year. And then I'm working on as a podcast researcher, which is a very fancy title for I'm a member of a podcast production team, but like they already had a producer, so I couldn't get that title. And it's called Calling Bullshit. It's this branded podcast that is being made for the CEO of a branding and consulting company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That must be a nice paycheck.
You know, it doesn't hurt. I think that when I first started, I was like, oh, I just like podcasting, but I had no idea what I was doing.
You have a great voice for it.
Oh, thank you. So when do you think Queer Creative will be back?
Vanessa and I are actually going to Aruba in a week, and we're going to talk about it then.
I had never been,
and we've been wanting to do this for a couple of years now, and because of COVID, we've been putting it off.
Yeah.
So we were finally like, this summer, we were like, oh, it should be fine in the winter.
Yeah.
And of course, now we're in the middle of Omicron, and I doubt we're going to end up going. But hopefully, if we go to Aruba as planned, then we can discuss it, and we'll probably pick back up in February.
Oh, amazing. I'm so excited for it to come back. You know, listening to podcasts, it's a guilty pleasure. You kind of like find yourself sneaking away, popping in your headphones and just like spending time with like these friends in your head. It's almost selfish. Like I remember during the kind of monotony of COVID, I was living with family. I would sneak away from my mom and my sister and like pop in my headphones for an hour. And they're like, where'd you go? And I was like, nothing. I don't want to share this with you. I'm just hanging out listening to my favorite podcast.
What kind of podcast are you listening to?
I like a mix of either like quality information or just things that make me laugh or things that inspire me.
I'm way more into funny and humor. I was just listening to Sloppy Seconds, actually, before I got on here.
Yeah.
Which just makes me laugh so much. And then Bald and the Beautiful with Trixie and Katya.
I've never listened to that one, but I imagine it'd be so good because they're just so funny.
Yeah.
And you know, the weirdest thing is I always forget how quick Trixie is. Have you watched Queen of the Universe?
I have. So I really enjoyed the show. Mm-hmm. I missed the first three episodes, but my boyfriend is obsessed with the show and he's watched the entire season. I mean, it's like 6 or 8 episodes or something.
It's just 6 episodes. You can do it in a weekend, which is what I did. You know how I was saying that I kind of burnt out? So I had to really take a hiatus off and be like, I'm not watching Queen of the Universe. I don't care. And then I was like, but you know what? Like, since it's over, like, let me just dive in. And I was like, okay, I'll watch the first and the last episode. I watched the whole thing. It was so entertaining. And Trixie was one of my favorite judges.
Yeah.
She had a joke for everything. And Leona Lewis is so sassy. Like, she's
she
actually
really
kind
is.
Of a...
Yeah, she totally is a...
Like her feedback was like, it wasn't very good. Sorry. It was a little pitchy for me.
Oh, your good accent's great. To me, she gave off that energy of like, why am I here? I can't believe I have to do this for this paycheck. Like, let's get this over with. And I'm like, you're at a table with Vanessa Williams. Calm down.
I know. I think it was just that, like, Leona Lewis knows how good she is. Like, I watched her kind of like X Factor journey, and she always came off as like, oh, I'm just Leona Lewis and I love it. And I really like singing. Thank you so much, Simon, blah, blah, blah. But like, she knows exactly how beautiful and how good she is. And she's very unapologetic about it. I was shook.
Good for her. If you got the talent.
Yeah. I mean, she's incredibly talented. But did you think that Grad Queen was going to win?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she was fantastic.
I thought it was going to be Aria. But then Aria had that like tragic, like, she was just at the bridge of the song and went right out of tune, right at the finale. And just, it was rough.
Yeah, that last performance really, I think, nailed it for her.
It was so unexpected because it's one thing to go like slightly flat, but it's another thing to just balls to the walls, be 100% out of tune for like half a song.
Are you a singer?
Yeah.
Sing me something.
What? I don't know.
I'm sorry. I don't want to put you on the spot. What do you, is it musical theater? Is that your background?
Yeah. So I was doing musical theater before COVID and I was just trying to, you know, work my way towards my equity card and then the world ended. So
that's wonderful. You know, in another life, how old am I? I just turned 43 yesterday.
I forget all the time too.
But in another life, if I could do it over, I think I would have gone into theater.
Storytelling, it's a really powerful medium.
Yeah.
I remember I was in this play, it was called Old Turtle and the Broken Truth. And it was this beautiful allegory about how, you know, people can be selfish sometimes, but one of the greatest gifts that you can learn is that not only are you loved, but other people are loved as well. And like, something went wrong with the production company and they didn't advertise it really well. And so there were like 5 people in the audience or like 1 person in the audience or like something like that. You know, you'd think that that would be like the most humiliating thing. But I remember giving what felt like one of my best performances and being so proud and having 1 person clap. And I was like, it's enough.
Yeah, totally.
I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing on this earth. And that's when I knew, I was like, oh, actually, I'm all in on this performance thing. like it's not really for anyone but me. And just the fact that we put on the show and that person really got the message of the play was incredibly powerful. And I hope to go back to it, but I'm also very afraid of COVID. So, you know, for now, it's been really nice to try different mediums. Like, I wrote a play over COVID.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I wrote a play that's called Love, Race, and Corona. So it was actually like following a character that's loosely based on me trying to find love in the middle of a pandemic.
I love it.
So for you, what's a place that you would, I guess, identify as a safe queer space, a place that you like to enjoy that some people might not know about?
Sure. I'll answer this 2 ways. So, you know, I grew up in my early 20s. When I came out, I was 19 and I lived in Boston at the time. And there was the neighborhood still exists, obviously, but the South End, which you might be familiar with, was a very gay, especially in the 90s. It was very, very gay. So it's like a gayborhood, right? Which every major city sort of had one. And I really miss those. I miss that community. And I miss going into a bodega and then there's a queer person. I miss like walking down the street and it's just all queer people.
Yeah.
And you get to know your neighbors. And I really miss that. I wish those would come back. And to answer your question, I think I want to say the internet. I avoided social media outside of work-related stuff. So I never had a personal social media. And then when the pandemic hit, I was bored, obviously. So I started tweeting.
We all were.
Yeah. And the queer community within Twitter, which, you know, it's also a rancid, toxic waste stuff.
Yeah,
but there is some beauty there. Like, for instance, I met Alexandra Owensby, who you know, and you met in who introduced the two of us. You met outside of a nightclub, I believe.
Yeah.
And I met her on social media and a lot of our listeners on social media. And I found that that queer space is really important. And I guess just because I avoided social media for so long, that me diving into it, you know, it was like seeing, just experiencing it for the first time was so magical to me. And it really opened my eyes to how large that community is online and actually what you can receive from it. I always thought it was sort of like a plastic sort of make-believe or reimagining of like one's persona on there. But there's a lot of genuinely lovely, beautiful people online that are really interested in what you want to say and want to have conversations with you. So I guess that would be my, as of this moment, my favorite queer place is probably, you know, online.
That is so beautiful. You know, it's funny. I don't tweet. I don't twat. I'm very afraid of Twitter because I'm afraid of like saying something and then having it be like rude like 20 years later and someone like like saving all my receipts.
Yeah. Well, I talk like a f-ing sailor, and can I swear? Sorry.
You're allowed to swear, yeah.
Okay, so I curse like a sailor, and I trash talk and troll all over the place. I'm 40 years old. I'm just, you know, it is who I am. It's part of my personality.
Yeah, you're grown, you know your mind, and you're allowed to have your opinions.
Totally. And you just kind of sort of dive into it. You can't really be afraid of what people will use against you. And if you are, just delete it.
Well, no, because the way that you describe Twitter actually is how I feel about this podcast, like getting a chance to meet queer people all over the world who have a passion about a specific and what they're putting out into the world has really been awesome.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, you have to be social on social media in order for it to work. And what you're describing from Twitter is like, oh yeah, I guess I would probably appreciate Twitter if I was just a person on Twitter communicating with people.
Especially Twitter, you have to engage.
Yeah.
Instagram, we have a pretty big following on Instagram. And it's a little bit shocking to me because we don't really engage. We just put our interviewees' content on there. And I guess the content speaks for itself.
It really does.
You know, it's not ours. We're not creating anything. We're just sharing other people's content that we interview. But yeah, we don't engage on there at all. And we, I mean, I haven't posted anything on there in a couple of months.
You have like 20,000 followers or something.
Yeah, it's wild how much it fluctuates. It's interesting.
No, I mean, I just think it's because you're showcasing so many amazing people. It's fun to just dive in. There's something so cool about like what makes people special and just highlighting that as part of the Instagram. It almost creates this kind of like Rolodex kind of experience.
Yeah, it's also a sense of community in itself too, right? So like I have a lot of listeners that cross-communicate in the mentions and not postings, which I really like. I do enjoy reading those when you're discussing like the person that we interviewed, our guest for that week. Oftentimes there'll be conversations underneath those posts. And I find that very lovely, like the exchange and how our listeners are sort of interacting. It was unexpected. I guess, obviously that's what people would do, but I wasn't prepared for it. And when I saw it, it made me a little teary-eyed because I was like, oh, look, we have a community that's actually forming.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Because this virus attacks the lungs,
it's never more infuriating when you realize that your life has a price tag on it.
The truth of the matter is, we are in the middle of an apocalypse.
There's no leadership.
I went from being an ER nurse to you're a healthcare hero. I feel like a sham.
Apocalypse Now is a podcast that asks if we are living at the beginning of the end. I'm Joanna Van Fine. Join me every week as I talk with interesting people and decide if we're all doomed. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there. Ever wonder if you're using the right service? Tooltip is a website that helps you find the right tools 10 times faster. And now it has a podcast called Tooltip Time. We're your hosts, Mijan Zulu and Jude Brewer. Join us as we're tasked to explore different tools and, warning, sometimes things may get weird, but we'll always let you know the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our first season is about a topic that's near and dear to our hearts, podcasting. We are two people from the industry that are committed to finding the stuff that actually works so that you can make the best decision for you, your project, or your business. See you on Wednesday for Tooltip Time. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about the drag race.
Yes, let's drag these queens.
So this week on RuPaul's Drag Race, we have yet another talent show.
Episode 2.
Yeah, and then the seven queens, and then the dramatic reveal of the first cis male straight contestant to be on the show. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this was a very weird second premiere for me. Mm-hmm. In comparison to the first one, it kind of was like a downer.
Agreed. Totally. Also, can we just, it's a lip syncing competition show.
Yeah.
If you have an episode that is about a talent show, mm-hmm. it should not be lip syncing.
Yeah.
We know you're lip sync. That's why you're here. Like, we want to see more, girl. Give us, like, even the lip sync and dancing, I'm like, if you're doing some sort of weird dance, like maybe an Irish dance or mm-hmm. like something we haven't seen before, yeah. sure, go for that and lip sync mm-hmm. while you're doing that. But like ballet and lip syncing, like, I'm sorry, we've seen it. Like, show me anything else. Give me a magic trick or a striptease or like anything, you know, play an instrument. Even like Maddie, the straight bro, mm-hmm. even like his talent was like playing the guitar. I'm mm-hmm. like, what is happening here? Like, you're not even doing something. It's like, that is a talent, sure, but you couldn't have picked a better song. What did he play, like Metallica or something? What
was it? He was just playing the blues.
Was he? Oh, all right.
It actually like wasn't like a, it didn't even feel like a whole song. You know, because like, you know how the blues is like, well, I da 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 da, you know, like, it's like, and I'm going home. Like, it just kind of felt like he did like the improv section of a song with no melody, start or end. And then it felt like,
a straight man playing a drag queen.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what made it so funny, because it's like, if you didn't believe that Matty Morphosis was straight, watch Matty Morphosis play that guitar, and that was the music of a straight man. So I took the liberty of giving my immediate reactions to the queens as they were walking in. So we have Gorgeous, something, some sort of weird name. I was like, Gorgeous. So Gorgeous was tiny. Deja Sky, funny queen, like literally like laughing. Like, I was like, okay, finally we have humor. Jasmine Kennedy, who? Like, I was very underwhelmed when they walked in. I was like, who on earth is this? Maddie, I was like, cute, you know, kind of, it was like basic-ish with that weird kind of, because like, who chooses to, the highway diner guy as the inspiration for a drag outfit? I was like, what is this?
Guy Fieri.
Yeah, Guy Fieri. Yeah, Guy.
Like, he's the straightest straight man. Also, there weren't even like jokes. At least, if you're going to come out as Guy Fieri, like, okay, I could get the camp, it's funny, or it could be at least, but you have to like, there should be jokes to follow it up on. You should have like beat us over the head with this. And I was like, nobody mentioned it.
It just, I mean, I don't know what she was doing with that. And then there was, wait, Angeria? Oh, Southern. I was like, Lord, we're going to get some sweet tea from this one. We had Lady Camden, who sounded kind of posh. And then we had Diabetti, who was giving like such good rock and roll energy when they walked in, but then gave us nothing for like the rest of the episode. Like, the only thing I thought about Diabetti was like, okay, clearly you're friends with Crystal, but you're like the quiet friend and you're, you know, like hot out of drag.
Yeah.
I was kind of more like, oh, I date him. Rather than be like, I would date him, and then like maybe I'd go to the drag show, or maybe I'd be like, honey, when's your set over? I'll stop by right after. Like,
totally. Like, I like the punk rock look.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the blonde sort of hair in the punk rock aesthetic that's typically like, you know, a darker hair color. But it was, yeah, lackluster. I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. And then what was so weird is like the other girls had to be like hung upside down while doing a photo shoot. this crowd just gets to sit on some Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this is like the cruelest combination of, you know, first challenges. And then also, why was Alicia Keys like in a box?
Well, COVID. She's probably like, I don't want to be anywhere near these queens. I don't want them touching me with their filthy fingers.
But, you know, it kind of made me feel like on Alicia Keys' rider, she was like, I'm not going to be exposed to anyone that I like, you know. And so she's like, all right, I'll just like be in the box with like a glass of my eye.
She was probably like, I saw what they did to Miley. They're not touching me.
Well, it just was so weird to have her be in the box. And then she was like, she's like, you inspire me, like, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, I've never heard of Alicia Keys being like, one, a big ally or like, you know, inspired by drag queens. Like, she's not like, she's not the, especially after she did like the no makeup thing, she's never been like a flamboyant, you know, like diva.
Yeah, you're right. She hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, Lizzo, you can make very strong, you know, connections between Lizzo being a fabulous Black woman and then also like, you know, maybe also being inspired by like the fabulosity of like a drag queen because she's a larger than life character. I mean, Alicia Keys is just,
you know, Nicki Minaj too. She's another one that.
Oh, 100%. Hair extensions, you know, makeup, blah, blah, blah. And then, so it's like, what sort of advice could Alicia Keys give any of them besides Metamorphosis? Because she was like, and it was so funny because you saw her like nodding her head being like, I'm getting the soul. But but it was very like, it was kind of like Emperor's New Clothes. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone was willing themselves to listen to the song, but it was like, I don't know, like, what are we doing? And then I do have to say that even though Georges was just dancing, I kind of feel like she had the best, like one of the best, like just overall displays. It's like Georges was like, look, I'm very pretty and I move really well. This is my talent. that was Angeria.
Yeah.
Well, because it was the only one with personality. It was the only one with personality and it told a story and she showed that she could be funny. But the only weird thing was, like, what was with the wig reveal that, like, wasn't really a wig reveal?
Yeah, I was thinking, is she going to shake that out or something? What's happening?
And I always have a rule on Drag Race where I'm like, okay, first of all, don't take your wig off unless you have a wig underneath. And then the other rule is that the wig underneath should probably be a better wig than what you had underneath, unless it is the exact same wig a la Monet Exchange. Where she took off her pussycat wig to have another pussycat wig, like, right underneath.
Brilliant and hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, like, it should be a statement where she took off that big, pretty wig and then just had this, like, tiny little black pussycat number underneath. I was like, you didn't really think that through. Because
it had no movement. It looked, like, painted onto her. It was bizarre.
I always have to say that, like, the point of a reveal is to elevate the performance.
Yeah.
When Sasha Velour took off her red wig and had petals falling and she was shaking. It was like live performance art. And that's what, you know, even though she won like, I think like one or two challenges and like basically like Shea Coulee was robbed, it was such an elevation in that performance that it was transcended. And so that's what made her a star. And she's proven that over time with like nightgowns and whatnot. But like that wig reveal was just like, okay, I get that everyone has to have like a reveal now when they come on the show because it's like a thing that's been done in the past. But if it's just a reveal for reveal's sake, I'm like, you really need to go back to the drawing board because whoever helped you make the costume, you should have been like, okay, here's the point in the song where you take the wig off and this is why you're doing it.
It totally. And also then it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of thought put into it. It's just like the issue I had with the talent show, where they're lip syncing. It's like you knew that this was happening and you mm-hmm. just thought that you were going to just do a lip sync that you're going to be doing anyway. It just doesn't seem well thought through. It's like, here's your time to shine. Stand mm-hmm. out, do something, yeah. Anything, give us something.
I know. And then what on earth was Deja Sky thinking with the cheerleading demonstration? Because
awful. first of all, she said that she taught cheer.
Yeah.
Then if you teach cheer, like I get that she was doing a parody of it, but mm-hmm. it wasn't even good. It was like oh, you can't even chair yourself. I'm like, you're parodying something that you don't even seem to be good at. It's like, what's happening here? It's not funny. It was weird.
And then the other thing was that, like, she said, she's like, I'm a big girl, but I can move. And I was like, but it looks like you're struggling to move.
Totally.
The high kick was not it was a low kick. It was a low kick, high kick. And I was just like, Deja, like, where's the energy level? I play gay volleyball. And so gay cheerleaders were always like right in front of us when we used to like process down, you know, Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, I have a friend in the cheer squad.
Yeah, I mean, they have so much energy. They have so much energy.
Yeah.
They are jubilant people, mm-hmm. and they're doing insane things, throwing themselves around. Like, they should all be wearing like neck braces or whatever. So I was like, gay cheer, this is not, because I know what that should look like. And this was not it. And then she was supposed to be the funny queen, and it wasn't funny.
Not at all. She talks about it in Untucked, and she got very upset with herself. But it's true, though. It's like, I would have been upset with myself, too. It was like, you bombed hard.
Yeah. And sometimes I think like, okay, well, maybe this would have worked better if there was a crowd. But I was like, no. Well, no, because it's one of those things where it's like, you have to get the laugh as soon as possible. When I did stand up the first time, I just walked in. I was like, hey, everybody, like, blah, blah, blah. And people started giggling. I was like, why are you laughing? I haven't even made a joke yet. And then they started laughing again. And I was like, so I can literally say anything and you're just going to laugh. And then everyone started laughing again. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm nailing this set. You know,
the job here is done. Goodbye.
Like, I had jokes and like the jokes were funny, but I just thought it was really funny that like, if you bring that energy when you walk on, it sells the rest of the shows. So I was like, okay, Deja, like, I need to see some more talent come out of this. And I guess we did see it during the lip sync. Cause like, you know, RuPaul was like, it seems we have a lip sync assassin on our hands. And I was like, maybe?
Totally. I felt the same way. I was like, I guess we didn't see a lot of what she was doing there, because I didn't think it was an assassin level. I did enjoy her. I thought she was the rightful winner, and I did enjoy the lip sync on her end of things. I think the other one was terrible. What's her name?
Dia Betty.
Yeah, Dia Betty was awful.
It just didn't translate. You know, like, Dia Betty was just kind of like wandering around, and it's like, this is I Keep On Falling In and Out of Love, like the signature song of Alicia Keys. And it is a soulful, church-filled, you know, ballad. It's like, if you don't take it to church or at least look like dramatic, go home, which she did. No.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that doing a slow song this like that this early in the competition is really unfair. I feel like because the nerves are going to be there and everyone's, you know, to be fair, this is their first time on that stage. It's like, you gotta give them at least a peppy song to jump around and
do like
their
a beat or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Let them enjoy it too. Don't give them a slow song where it's like, that should be saved for like towards the end of the season. I feel like,
I know, because not
you
everyone's
have
a Latrice Royale.
You know the character and like like Latrice Royale from back in the day, where she just stood there and did that such a powerful performance.
Because I really do firmly believe that drag is performance art, and you have to sort of like transform the song into something that like deeper and more meaningful than it was before. And I say this as someone who's like in his 30s, not everyone can do a split, and not everyone should do a split. And splits are just splits.
Yeah, you know, I wish I could do a split. I'd be popping my pussy all over town.
I know, right? There are all these like stretching apps that I keep finding on Instagram, and I really, really want to just like take a course just so I can do a split. But you know what?
Huh? Do you know Nicole Byer?
Yes.
So Nicole Byer went on this journey on her podcast about wanting to do a split, and she had been practicing for like a year with like what you were just talking about with doing all these exercises, and she finally got there, and it was quite the ride. But the entire time, I'm like, I'm literally listening to her over months' time learn how to do a split. And all I talk about is, I wish I could do that. I'm like, I could have did this at the same time.
At the same rate, yeah.
Yeah. Instead, I'm listening to her complain about it constantly.
So, you know, obviously, Angeria wins. She deserved to win. She was the only one that, like, told a story, came and did it.
She looked like a beautiful, exotic bird.
I know. That's what it is. She has like this like reptilian quality about her. And so it's going to be really interesting once we get back to, you know, all the queens all together to see how she sizes up, like, versus against, like, Cornbread, for instance.
Right. Cornbread is, like, I can't. She is one of the most exciting queens to come across this show in a couple of seasons. Like,
I know.
Obsessed with Cornbread. She, everything she does is gold.
I know. Someone was, on Friday, I was at the gay bar, shocker. And someone that I was talking to said, Cornbread is like silky nutmeg ganache, but like aware of like how to sell what Cornbread knows what she's selling. I don't think silky nutmeg ganache always knows what she's selling.
Yeah, there's more wisdom, I think, and also maturity with Cornbread than there is with Silky. Silky's very young. Isn't she like 24 or something? She's very young.
Oh, really? She has a master's. I feel like you need to be at least
true.
In your...
Maybe she's like 28 or something.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like you have to be in like the second half of your 20s if you have like a master's in like management
she's
and stuff.
She's annoying as I love Silky. People were really turned off to her, but she I had a soft spot for her, especially during that All-Star season.
When she single-handedly did lip sync
after lip sync, yes.
I was like, this is like, you know, it's not a swan song, but this is Silky proving why she's a superstar. Because she's actually smarter than a lot of the girls because she had a gag for every single one of those lip syncs. And
she sure did.
Again, right. Elevated the song. And so, you know,
she had me standing in my living room yelling at the TV. Like,
me too.
Like straight people do for a football game or something. I was.
Well, this is our football.
That's true. Yes.
This literally is our football. But that's what I mean. And it's that level of lip syncing. Because, like, you know, I would say that, like, there's, like, Silky Nutmeg Ganache, like, Manila Luzon. Like, there's certain people who can just give you a lip sync.
Yeah.
And on this episode, we basically saw nothing but lip syncs, and none of them really hold a tea to some of like the excellence that we've seen in the past.
On a lip sync competition. I turned to my boyfriend when we were watching it and I was like, she should send them both home. I was like, let's just move forward and like get rid of these queens because do the basics here. It's like, let's just cut right through them and give other people a better chance, like more of a chance. You know, it's like, it's wild.
Yeah, it's like, what in the honey mahogany is going on this season?
Right, and these people grew up on it, right? So they've been watching it since they were a child. It's like, how do you not know what you're doing still? Like, it's really strange.
Well, I also think about this because sometimes that's kind of like the curse of like growing up watching Drag Race. Because when the inspiration for your drag is literally like just drag, I feel like it comes off as very like surface level. There's no way that drag is supposed to be, but I feel like drag is almost like commentary on like culture. So your references have to be specific and not just the copy of a copy of a copy, because when, you know, once you get to the third copy, it's like counterfeit basically.
Yeah, I prefer my drag queens to be able to like win a knife fight. Like I want some roughness around them. I need some lived experience. I don't need some like 20-year-old twink like who's lived, you know, a two-parent household and you know, I don't know.
I mean, that's why Bianca was so refreshing when she was on the season. She was like in her, like she was like 40 already, or maybe, or at least like 39 when she was on the show. And she's just like, I've been in bars, I've been heckled at, I've been performing, you know, I'm friends with Cheetah Rivera. You know, but she knew herself. And so sometimes I'm like, okay, it's really great that we can like get onto a TV show, but like also like go to the bar and perform and go on tour and mess up and deal with a heckler. Because those drag queens, that knife fight energy, those people are superstars.
Superstars.
Yeah.
Like Bob the drag queen. You could put him in any scenario and that he'll win you over. Like he's amazing.
Yeah. But like, I remember when Bob got on the show, Bob the drag queen was like an urban myth. Like everyone was just... everyone had been talking about Bob's performances. Like, yeah. I was, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, have you heard about this Bob, this drag queen called Bob the Drag Queen? They're at, Bob used to perform a lot in Chelsea. And so,
I know exactly what bar you're talking about. I can't think of the name of it either. Had you not seen any of his performances?
No, I hadn't.
I had seen quite a few of his. They were powerful. Watching him, even before Drag Race, you knew that, like, oh, this, like, after one performance of his, you'd be like, oh, this, he's going to be famous. Like,
yeah. No, and so I hadn't gotten a chance to see Bob, but then there was the roast of Bianca Del Rio that happened at Pride right before Bob got on the show. And it was Bob, Tina Burner, Delta Lake, Courtney Act, this guy that used to write on The Village Voice. He wears like black glasses. He's on like every like pop culture like commentary yeah, show.
He's got club feet. What's his name?
Yeah, yeah. Huge club kid. And so I was there for like for Bob's stand-up set. And I was like, this person is a superstar. And apparently that was Bob's audition for the show. Like the producers were in the audience and they were like, it was basically between, oh, and Shaquita was there and she bombed, unfortunately. But it was basically between Shaquita, Tina Burner, and Bob to like get that New York slot. And Bob's performance won, like was 9 times out of 10, just like amazing. And so, you know, but it's that level of queen is what we're searching for. Because my theory about Drag Race is that we're watching a bunch of amateurs, but what we want are professionals. And when you give that energy off, that's what really takes you far in the show. So, you know, for episode 2, I'm a little confused, but I've been wrong before. Sometimes it does take people a couple episodes to really open up and get starstruckness of like meeting RuPaul and being on the show to like really dig into their creativity. But, you know, it's cornbread for me right now.
Yeah, same. Cornbread, Willow Pill. I do like Georgia's because she's just a weirdo. Beautiful little tiny doll.
Yeah.
I like the, you know, exotic bird who won the challenge. What was her name?
Angeria.
Yeah.
And I have to say that the only one who was like, besides, I mean, Angeria's outfit was great, but the real drag that happened was actually Maddie Morphous's Antoinette beheading.
Oh, I have some gossip.
What?
So somebody sent me last night that there's a drag queen on social media, Instagram. I can't recall the drag queen's name, but she basically posted, hey, he stole my look. He trolled me online, liked all of my photos. I had this exact look posted 2 years ago, and he just took it for the main stage and doesn't give me credit. I reached out to him and asked him if he could just as simple, just quote me as being credit for inspiration at least. And when you see the side-by-side photos, he clearly copied it. It's exactly the same. I know. I was like,
Eddie.
Well, listen, everyone steals from each other, but at least give credit. It's like, come on, what are you doing? You knew that this was going to happen if you did steal it. It's like, I don't know.
Oh my God. And pictures don't lie.
Yeah. It's also kind of shitty because he's not even queer. It's like, what are you doing? How do you feel about that?
Well, so Maddie did post and sort of explain that he understands his privilege and then also feels like he wanting to explore his own gender expression through drag in this way has been a really, you know, powerful journey for him. So even though he's not queer, I would say that a man putting on a dress, there's a queerness to it, even if you identify as like cis hetero. And I don't want to say like, oh, he's a queer, like he is queer, but he's cis, you know what I mean? But like, there's a queerness to it, if that makes any sense.
Of course, yeah.
So even though Maddie identifies as a cisgendered heterosexual, I do believe that like the act of doing drag welcomes him into the queer umbrella, but obviously not as like an LGBTQ person, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let him do whatever the hell he wants, right? I guess my question was more so for the show. Obviously, it's a television program. They need to up the ante and sort of come up with these, like, you know, twists and turns. How do you feel about that, though? Because this was typically an all-queer cast for many, many years.
Yeah, and the funniest thing is that they keep saying, like, oh, this is the first time, like, a cis-hetero person has been competing in Drag Race. But when they did the celebrity drag race show, there were a bunch of straight men getting into drag.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is not the first time this has happened. It's just the first time that it's been a contestant. And I think the funniest thing is like the final frontier is a white straight guy doing drag. this is when diversity.
Yeah, totally.
So I do think that that's kind of funny. But I also think that it's an interesting conversation, right? Because the fear that most people have of queer people is that we're going to convert them all into our way and, you know, corrupt children and blah, blah, blah. In a way, this is most very homophobic people's worst nightmare. Now there's a straight guy doing drag. Like, that's so crazy. And it's like, well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's fine. You know, like, maybe it's just a sign that, like, queer culture is really becoming a part of the mainstream. And maybe, hopefully, that will make it safer for more people. That's my hope, that all of these TV shows give people a little bit more of understanding of someone else's experience. And then hopefully will save that young queer person in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas. You know, because I do think that RuPaul's Drag Race has put in a concerted effort to really change up the geographic diversity of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I hope that that means that in these areas that are very intolerant, it's going to expose people to this and hopefully, like, build a bridge. I hope.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like Maddie represents, even though I don't think that a straight white man is, like, the answer to diversity problem on Drag Race.
Yeah, totally. I just found him rather boring, and I was like, oh, he's like a stunt.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you wanted straight realness, we're getting straight realness from Maddie.
Exactly. Totally. I mean, his end of, runway look, I thought was the best of the moment, except the flats. I didn't understand why he was wearing ballet flats, but the look itself, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then, this morning I woke up to a text from a friend and all these screenshots of the original creator of that look and how he stole it. So now I'm like, oh, well, that sucks.
I mean, it really sucks that happened, but you know what? The gays, or just the queers in general, we will find the references.
Totally.
You can't get one by us, because it's as if there's, like, a Rolodex in our head and we're like, oh no, I've seen that before. Mm-mm, that's not original. Mm-mm, no. You can totally see that queen being like, oh, I know exactly what this is. And then they text their friends, and then all of a sudden everyone in the whole world knows, because, like, the queer world is, like, this big and everyone's just like... it's like, you know, I mean, but here's the thing. I do think that, like, in recent times, I kind of feel the same way I do about Maddie that I do about that Bachelor guy who got his own TV show on Netflix.
Is his name Colton?
Yeah, Colton. I'm like, this is not a story that seems really profound to me. Like, no. Okay.
Yeah. How disinterested. I couldn't be more disinterested in this person. I was like, he's like a cheesy vanilla, like, Kansas, please. I don't need about him. I was like, he's gay? Great. Suck a dick and leave me alone.
I know, literally. I'm like, why don't you go do that, since you haven't been doing it for a while, and then come back and talk to me once
the OnlyFans says.
No, because I mean, I was, it's like, I watched, like, all the, like, gay, you know, news blogs or whatever. He's already bought a house and has moved in with his, like, you know, rich boyfriend whom he met, you know, over very soon after coming out. I'm like, you're already wifed up already. Like, there's nothing interesting here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, go talk to some, like, you know, youth shelter or something, like, or I don't know. It's just, it's the most boring narrative, and I want less of these stories on my Drag Race.
Didn't he come from, like, a wealthy background or a privileged background anyway?
Yeah.
And then it's like, where's the struggle here? And wasn't he abusive to his ex-girlfriend or something?
He was controlling, abusive, and, like, basically psycho crazy. So, like, I don't understand.
A story that Netflix decided to pick up? I don't understand. It makes no sense.
Yeah, well, Netflix also did the David Chappelle thing. So, like, I don't know what's going on over there. So, Jonah, on the show, we do believe in supporting and encouraging the consensual, fervent, and impassioned stalking of all of our guests. So where can people find you, lift you up in a consensual manner?
You can find my interior design work on Instagram at MKWorkshopBK and our podcast on Instagram at The Queer Creative Podcast. On Twitter, I am at Creative Queer. And then my website is mkworkshop.net.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. Please keep creating, keep changing lives and inspiring, you know, people to create. Because honestly, I don't think I would have given myself the license to keep this podcast going, or even to have had the audacity to write a full script, if I hadn't started listening to your podcast. So thank you for inspiring me to be, you know, and hopefully many more people to just pick a passion and fly with it, you know?
Oh, I love it. And no truer words have been spoken. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So until next week, guys, we'll see ya. Bye.
Bye.
Whispering Hunties is not endorsed by World of Wonder, VH1, Viacom, Great Canada, or any of their subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. It involves Drag Race and Canada's Drag Race, and all names, pictures, and audiences are registered trademarks and or copyrights. Their respective copyright holders.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast you just heard.